The most irrational, unprincipled, and venomous acts in intellectual history were committed in a conspiratorial fashion by supposedly reasonable, highly educated scientists and scholars, all for the purpose of suppressing a revolutionary idea. The idea? Venus, Velikovsky argued, had in recent time been born as a comet ejected from Jupiter, and had wondered, when you look at that morning star, Venus, have any of you been there? Were you around when it happened? I mean, is there anybody that you know that can tell you, well, I saw Venus when Venus was formed. I know. I was there. I was head of the Department of Astronomy. Our telescope was pointed to the spot. I know. I helped God put it together with my Tinker toy set. Where do these scientists get their ideas? They talk about the Big Bang Theory as the way the universe was created, as though somebody was there lighting the firecracker. And all to read Genesis 1 is to, you know, bore a hole in your head and suck out the brains. Along comes Velikovsky. And he challenges their theory. Venus, Velikovsky argued, had in recent time been born as a comet ejected from Jupiter, and had wandered the solar system. By the way, has anybody satisfactorily explained to you why Jupiter has so many moons? Venus was born as a comet ejected from Jupiter. And hey, I am not arguing Velikovsky's position, but I think I'm honest enough to say nobody yet has taken pictures of a happening to disprove it. Venus, Velikovsky argued, I think I said that before, had in recent time been, am I boring you? Been born as a comet ejected from Jupiter, and had wandered the solar system, nearly colliding with the Earth in the 15th century B.C. Now, does anybody have a family Bible with a grandparent who wrote in it in the 17th century B.C., I saw Venus rise this morning? Anybody listening to me? 3,700 years old, I'd like to call the witness out. Because if Venus was flying around in the 17th century B.C., Velikovsky's got problems. Does anybody know anybody that's seen him? Was anybody, any of you here in the 17th century, were you here, Mike, the 17th century B.C.? No? Well, you look old enough. Venus, Velikovsky argued, had in recent time been, I think I said that, been born as a comet ejected from Jupiter and had wandered, am I boring you, Sammy? I want to be specific. I don't want to get a crowd response. Had wandered the solar system, nearly colliding with the Earth in the 15th century B.C., causing the Earth to rock on its axis twice and slip its crust as well. Now, there are two different theories of pole shift. One is the Earth sort of flops around. The other is the crust of the Earth slips in relationship to its molten sections in the center. So the crust shifts a little. Though the Earth may be still going on its axis, if the crust shifts a little. Pelikovsky says Venus passed so close to the Earth, nearly colliding with it in the 15th century after it shot out of Jupiter. It caused the Earth to rock on its axis twice and slip its crust as well. 8 centuries later, that'd be about 700 B.C., Venus again disrupted the solar system. As a comet, it made another pass, causing Mars to wander erratically into near collision with the Earth, again with several displacements of the terrestrial axes and accompanying lithospheric slippage. The lithosphere is the solid surface part of the crust of the Earth. You know, like soup when it starts to get cold, there's a crust on the top. The forces involved in accomplishing this, Velikovsky asserted, were primarily electromagnetic, not gravitational. That's important. And to support his assertions, Velikovsky offered as primary proof the ancient world's myths, legends, and histories of cataclysm. Now, in so doing, what he does is he proves the Bible, in my view. He's taken the Bible at face value. He doesn't even wait for it to be proved. He seeks a natural explanation of what happened as reported in the Bible. I don't need the natural explanation. God is more than natural. That's what supernatural means. I love Velikovsky's for finding the verification on the earth of these happenings in the Bible that scientists have just said that's myth. And he offers a natural explanation for it, and they're still fighting. In one breath, it seemed, an unknown outsider, had profaned the most sacred doctrines of celestial cause and effect, doctrines jealously guarded by the high priests of technological society, scientists. The cause of that cosmological heresy, Velikovsky would not be allowed a hearing. In the name of science, his data would be denounced, even worse, maliciously distorted. His views would be peremptorily blocked from presentation on the scientific podium and in professional journals. His books would be boycotted and scurrilously reviewed. His supporters summarily fired from positions they'd held responsibly for many years. His integrity impugned. His reputation blackened. His very name made anathema because he dared suggest a theory that blew the scientific community's uniformity theory to smithereens. I do not want you to forget that I believe in Gestalt theory, learning theory. The Gestalt I'm seeking at this point. You say, you ever going back to the pyramid? You better believe it. In fact, it is the pyramid versus Velikovsky. Not on his cataclysmic theories, but on his dating of certain events. I do not agree with Velikovsky's viewpoints on shepherd kings. To him, the shepherd kings are the Ammonites who moved into the vacuum left in Egypt when the Israelites left. Well, I'm totally convinced the shepherd kings' second installment were the brethren of Joseph and their successors, who ruled Egypt without conquering it until they were driven out. Velikovsky's strength is not in his interpretive theories, but in the massive data that he assembles with a gestalt of many disciplines. And the tragedy, what I'm seeking to have you see, is the bias and the prejudice and the closed-mindedness of the scientific community that exactly matches the bias, the self-righteousness, the closed-mindedness of the Pharisee community when Jesus came. The traditional established community in any age. It's as Reinhold Niebuhr says, sin is the problem of this world. And sin, in essence, is that desire to go our way and then deify it. Say that our way is not really falling short of God's way after all. And I am in the business of opening up people's minds to a fresh look at God's faithfulness. You don't have to apologize for God's word. You have to apologize for a few people that have distorted it. But God is faithful. Velikovsky may be a name you don't even want to learn to pronounce. But last time we were showing you that Darwin, if there is a Holy Spirit that pervades the scientific community, the spirit of Darwin is that. It is the spirit of Darwin that energizes the scientific community. It is the theory based upon uniform rates of happenings that pervades the universe of the scientist. And the church world is not to be respected, but the scientific world is. Well, Darwin was a fraud. That doesn't say the theory is a fraud. Evolution doesn't shake my faith. I'm just not satisfied it's been proven. But it sure doesn't shake my faith. But Darwin's a fraud. And a scientific community that couldn't discover what Arnold Brackman, a newsman, discovered with a little research, is not to be worshipped. That's all. You don't worship jackasses. A jackass says something worth listening to. If you're smart, you'll listen. But since we're trading gods, I'm trying to communicate a simple gestalt that the world that left the high priests of the church didn't improve its lot that much. Had some new high priests with new glossolalia, scientific gibberish that lended credence to very shaky theories of peanut-brained men. I'm a scientist. Good. Don't be a jackass like some of these. Be in love with truth. What they did to Velikovsky was criminal. Savage verbal attacks would be made against both the man and the work by people who bragged in the same breath they had not read his books. Sounds like people talking about Scott who'd never listened to him. And all because he had challenged a dogma. Others had done it. But Velikovsky was to experience something different. Unbridled outrage. Whereas others that had challenged dogma could be ignored, and were largely ignored, Velikovsky would feel the full wrath of some virtual, but not virtuous, pillars of the scientific community. In the process, much would be shown about the fragile assumptions and cliquish associations upon which presumed truth is often built. Much would also be shown about the state of mind prevailing in the scientific community, a state characterized by intellectual arrogance. Emmanuel Velikovsky, a Russian Jew born in 1895, studied medicine at the University of Moscow, graduated from it in 1921 with a medical degree. Earlier, he had studied in Scotland. After becoming a doctor, Velikovsky moved to Berlin, where he helped found a scholarly publication, Scripta Universitatis, conceived as a cornerstone for what would become Hebrew University at Jerusalem. It contained articles by Jewish scholars, including Albert Einstein. Einstein edited the mathematical physical volume of Scripta Universitatis. Years later, Einstein would enter the Velikovsky affair as one who disagreed with his views, but as a rare genius, defended his right to be heard without prejudice and abuse being heaped on him. In 1923, Velikovsky moved to Palestine and began medical practice in Tel Aviv. Soon, however, he became interested in psychoanalysis, went to Vienna to study under a pupil of Freud's. Thereafter, his practice in Jerusalem was limited to psychoanalysis. Freud and Velikovsky met in Vienna, later exchanged letters on scientific matters. Velikovsky also contributed articles to Freud's psychology journal, Imago. In 1930, he published a paper that proposed for the first time that the recently discovered phenomenon of electrical brainwave patterns could be applied in the diagnosis of epilepsy, because epileptics would have a particular brainwave signature. When in 1939, Freud published a series of essays that were to be his last book, Moses and Monotheism, an attempt to discern the psychological and historical origins of Judaism, Velikovsky began a complementary study of three subjects in Freud's work: Oedipus, Akhenaten, and Moses. The research required Velikovsky to come to the United States, so in 1939, a few weeks before the Second World War began, he brought his family to New York on a year's sabbatical leave. War imposed a longer stay. For 8 months, he worked in libraries, researching what would become ultimately his fourth book, Oedipus and Akhenaten. It was nearly completed when other research led to discoveries that drastically altered the course of his life. According to a short biography in Punsay magazine, May 1972, in April of 1940, according to this biography, Velikovsky was first struck by the idea that a great natural catastrophe had taken place at the time of the Israelites' exodus from Egypt, a time when plagues occurred, the Sea of Passage parted, Mount Sinai erupted, and the pillar of cloud and fire moved in the sky. Velikovsky wondered, does any Egyptian record of a similar catastrophe exist? People go to Sunday school all their life. The morning after the Israelites left, the garbage trucks arrived and the firstborn were carried away. There were a lot of empty houses, so real estate brokers were jostling for the listings, and there was a run on paint stores to paint the blood off of the various door jams that defaced all these new houses up for sale. There was a shortage of chariots. There were more women available for marriage. And the old men in Egypt didn't have as much competition from young bucks from the soldier camp. But business went on as usual. Nobody considered it significant to record water turned to blood, frogs in the poached eggs, lice in the linen. Old men on the street corner would say, you know, funny thing happened yesterday. I was sitting on a hill watching. Them Israelites, they went through the Red Sea and it just piled up dry land. And you know what? Pharaoh's army went in and the damn water fell on top of them. Huh? I believe I'll have another cigarette. Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? Not worth writing about. Of course, there was a column in the society page of the Memphis Times. Connectun Sobutton, the beautiful daughter of, was left at the altar. Her husband drowned in the Red Sea. They were to be married today at 10 o'clock. She was having an affair with the best man, it was revealed, but he drowned too. Nothing worth writing about, you know. That's stupid. I mean, sun can stand still and the rest of the world doesn't feel any effect. There's a problem for you. Every other nation in the world had a 24-hour day and the sun went through his normal motions. But there in the valley where Joshua was fitting the battle, the sun stood still. You see, Velikovsky was struck by the idea that a great catastrophe had taken place. He wondered, does any Egyptian record of a similar catastrophe exist? He found the answer in an obscure papyrus stored in Leiden, Holland. The Lamentations of an Egyptian Sage, Ipuwer. Since nobody was around to be introduced, nobody really knows exactly how you pronounce his name. Ipuwer. 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 In other words, Velikovsky realized, of course, there is some archaeologist way back there that first decided how you would pronounce it. And it is a sin to pronounce it otherwise. Ipuwer. In other words, Velikovsky realized, am I boring you, that the Old Testament story of Moses was not allegory, or embroidered legend, as scientists would have us believe, but was the documentary account by primitive people of actual historical events. The Ipuwer papyrus parallels the book of Exodus, describing the same catastrophe, the same plagues. I read it here one night, you remember? As a result of this discovery, Velikovsky began to reconstruct Middle Eastern history, taking this catastrophe, which brought the downfall of the Egyptian Middle Kingdom, as a starting point from which to synchronize the histories of Egypt and Israel. The result was to be his second book, Ages and Chaos, published in 1952. But there was a furor well before that, arising from the 1950 publication of his first book, Worlds in Collision, and when he published ages and chaos. He said he was working on that first, but he put out Worlds in Collision published first. This was the one that so infuriated the scientific establishment. Worlds in Collision began one afternoon in October 1940. Both of them started from reading the Bible. You don't think Satan has a hold on the minds of this world? Worlds in Collision began one afternoon in October 1940 when Bilikovsky noticed an important fact. The book of Joshua describes a destructive shower of meteorites occurring just before the sun, quote, stood still in the sky. How many of you have read your Bible and remember that from Sunday school? You remember the sun part, but how many of you remember the meteorites came down first? Couple, three. Could this be a coincidence? Or were the ancients recording a cosmic disturbance that must have shaken the entire earth and might have been related to the upheavals approximately 50 years earlier during the Exodus? A survey of other sources around the world convinced Bilikovsky that a global cataclysm had indeed overtaken the earth, and that Venus played a decisive role in that cataclysm. With this discovery, Bilikovsky asked himself how a disaster of such magnitude could be blotted from human memory. He called such a process collective amnesia. And his curiosity about it began a monumental life's work, a reconstruction of ancient history according to his catastrophe theory. He continued for 10 years to research the subject. And yet there are people that haven't read a line of his works that put him down. In 1950, he published the first of a half a dozen books to date that offered a radical revision of planetary mechanics and early human history. Bilikovsky's theory was as extraordinary for its method as for its results. He was no experimental scientist in the laboratory, adjusting sophisticated machines to get decimal point readouts. He was a scholar psychologist, reconstructing history from long ignored data found in myth and literature. He was criticized for that. In short, he was not so myopic that he couldn't stand out there and look. He started from the frame of reference that the collective mind of history, with all these myths talking of the same thing, which, by the way, I believe is in the residue of memory of every race, but God chose an oracle to tell the correct story, and that's why we have the Bible. A supervised record, whereas the other was an unsupervised accumulation of much telling from a common human experience. From those myths, Bilikovsky reconstructed his theories. He was criticized for using myths and not so much scientific proof. So his next book in the series met that challenge, and very well. But at this point, we're talking about Worlds in Collision. He was a scholar psychologist reconstructing history from long ignored data found in myth and literature, and was supporting his reconstruction with an incredible array of evidence from the physical, biological, and social sciences. The scope of his interdisciplinary research and the boldness of his conclusions were breathtaking. Moreover, he presented it all with a prose style that is dramatic and often spellbinding. Let's get his book in our... Let's get Worlds in Collision in our bookstore, Joe. There's a paperback issue of it that sells pretty cheap. I recall my own, this writer says, first exposure to Bilikovsky through the pages of Reader's Digest, which condensed his 1955 book, Earth and Upheaval. The images of frozen mammoths in Siberia and gigantic mounds of bones in Alaska impressed themselves indelibly on me. Impressionable teenager though I was, the same thing happened to many others more mature and more educated than I. Less than 2 months after publication, Worlds in Collision climbed to the top of the bestseller list. Now, the Catholic Church has an index. And churchmen got to be watched. They'll brainwash you. Now, the scientific community, searching ever, move a little bit to the left, searching ever, right there, that's good enough, right there, ever for truth, they would never brainwash anybody. Oh, you're allowed to be free. I lost my faith in university because I overrated those fakers. Worlds in Collision climbed to the top of the bestseller list. This, however, only added insult to injury in the eyes of the scientific establishment. What seemed to be a campaign led by Shapley had begun among college professors and scientists to pressure Velikovsky's publisher, Macmillan, not to bring out the book at all. Why do you think it's so hard to find copies of Quigley, Tragedy and Hope? Let's get that one in the bookstore, too. You know, it's going to be Doc's Intelligence Center. Might as well get his second one, too, the Anglo-American Establishment, which proves his point. These college professors and scientists actually publicly pressured Macmillan not to bring out the book at all. How could they do that? Because Macmillan is one of the greatest publishers of college textbooks in America. And professors make their money for them. When professors choose a textbook, look, I was just a reader for my professor, and he used to get these sample copies of new textbooks coming out, free, with all kinds of high pressure to choose it as your textbook when you teach. Do you realize how many forced sales come about when a major professor uses a textbook? Now they're about to produce Velikovsky's book. And a cadre of professors try to get Macmillan not to publish it. Oh, they're not going to brainwash you. They have great faith. You're their product. Scientists have taught you to be a free thinker. It nevertheless appeared and quickly rose to sales prominence. So the pressure tactic changed to threats of boycotting all Macmillan's books. All of Macmillan's books were to be boycotted. Fearing for his textbook sales, Macmillan took a step that was unprecedented in publishing history. While Worlds in Collision was holding the number one position on the New York Times list, bestseller, Macmillan sold it to Doubleday, which had no textbook division and was thus immune to the boycott threats. Oh, they'd never do this. You can trust scientists. You can trust professors. Only preachers are to be distrusted. Macmillan also fired the editor who had purchased Worlds in Collision. He was one of several people who would be sacrificed by various institutions to appease the wrath of the high priests of science. Darwin was a fraud, helped out by some scientists. Velikovsky challenged the traditions of the established community. The book's number one on the bestseller list. You see, You ordinary thinking people out there are not smart enough to make a decision. You've got to be protected from a Velikovsky and a Gene Scott, although I'm hardly in his camp. I mean, you know, when I'm dealing with stupidity, I don't mind being a little bit arrogant. But I also know how to respect people that are light years beyond me. But in my own way, I share one thing in common with Velikovsky. I'm in love with a search for the truth. Traditions be damned. And I have one gestalt I'm trying to communicate. The church world's not the only place people's minds are sought to be controlled. And you know something? It isn't the people that are worrying about their minds so much. It's somebody who has lost control of your mind that's worrying about somebody else getting it. I don't care what you read. I'll guarantee you, before we're done, in Doc's Intelligence Center, you'll see books you won't see anywhere else. Hey, we're selling when we can get it. We are selling Cosmic Conspiracy. I do not agree with his theory that the Club of Rome and a few others represent the restored Roman Empire at all. I do not agree with his theory of the Illuminati's influence on the American seal. But the book has got enough in it, particularly that it's worth the price for its exposure of weather warfare. And it's got some good stuff in it. I think you're smart enough, you know, some of you are smart enough to just not buy the books and let me do the work. But others of you got to check it out. It's fine. I want to set your brain free. Because I'm telling you, when you got it, you got it. And God's got it. God's got it. When you're finally set free and give God's word a chance, he'll grab you. Now, I'm ashamed of the closed-mindedness of the church world. But I'm not willing to sit silent and say that's the only place it happens. The establishment, wherever it becomes the establishment, is guilty of the same sin. Power corrupts, and that includes intellectual power. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. I'm slaughtering a future deep. Am I boring you? Am I boring you? Play me whatever you got up. If you got Ron's tape, play it. I want to know if you're up. I'm just going to stop doing it. I'm not going any further if I don't hear from you. Don't count yet. 1-800-338-3030 is the number. If you're out there and you are interested in anything I'm doing, when you get on the phone and talk to me, I am tired of the ordinary guy out there being treated like your brain is a piece of clay that somebody else can manage. Tired of television, acting like that you won't think. Try to deal with something that takes a little time and you'll shift over to watch them flip-flop in their beds in Dallas or Dynasty or somewhere else. Or listen to some goons laugh at each other. I believe there are some intelligent people still up. And if you are there, I want you to talk to me. 1-800-338-3030. I'm still looking for my budget for the month. What are you going to do in September? Can you tell me that now? 1-800-338-3030 is the number. Get on that phone. Talk to me. Right this minute. The treatment given Velikovsky constitutes an ugly... I'm still reading from Pole Shift by John White. The treatment given Velikovsky constitutes an ugly record of intellectual dishonesty, moral cowardice, and scientific hubris. Except for a handful of courageous men who stepped forth to defend Velikovsky's right to be heard in a fair and professional manner without emotional attacks, Velikovsky was shunned by the scientific and intellectual communities for a decade. Well, I guess we got 2 years to go, folks. Two more to go. Velikovsky's work was primarily a reconstruction of early history based on the testimony of early civilizations. From that reconstruction, he inferred certain astronomical events, which he claimed would be proven by scientific experimentation. In the 1960s, when space research began to give startling new data about the nature of the solar system, Velikovsky was many times proven correct. For example, what's funny over there? Somebody clowning behind you, Peter? They ought to run your camera into them. I don't miss much, folks. I got eyes in the back of my head. And this is going on in front of me. I'm going to have to work at this. For example, in 1950, the scientists said the cloud surface above Venus was known to be minus 25 degrees centigrade. That is, cold enough to freeze the hairs out of your nose. I'll wake him up, Lee. That's pretty cold. You could pick a booger out and throw it and kill a mammoth with it. I do that for my parents. They watch, and I like to make them proud. Venus was known to be minus... I bet you remember it's cold. What do you bet? I bet you there are lots of people that went right by. Now they know everybody thought Venus was cold. That's right. For example, in 1950, all scientists knew Venus was cold. 25 degrees centigrade on the day and night sides alike. Just stayed the same. Cold noses. Yet, Velikovsky declared in Worlds in Collision that the surface temperature of Venus would be much higher in the range of incandescence. This was entirely discordant with prevailing theory. By 1961, however, theory had to be revised because Mariner 2 flew past Venus and recorded a surface temperature of 800 degrees Fahrenheit. Boy, that'd melt your booger. Told you! Nobody here but us now. Degrees Fahrenheit, 200 degrees above the melting point of lead. There ain't no booger stand that. More exact measurements since then have raised the figure to 900 degrees Fahrenheit. That's why I have to use my handkerchief so much when I preach. It's that 800 degrees up there under those lights. Isn't that right, Ron? That's what he said. In short, all of that reduces down to Velikovsky was right. Yeah, that's what I said. In 1953, Velikovsky predicted that Jupiter would be found to send out radio noises as do the sun and stars. This was totally unacceptable to the theories of the time. But so certain was Velikovsky of the logic of his deductions and the coherence of his theory that he asked his old scientific colleague Einstein, also living in Princeton, to use his influence to have Jupiter surveyed for radio emissions. Warshawski recounts for us what happened. Space, Velikovsky had declared, is not a vacuum. And electromagnetism plays a fundamental role in our solar system and the entire universe. Although some stars were known to give off radio waves, the idea of a noisy space, crackling with radio waves, pressed by magnetic fields and riven by electrical charges and radioactivity, was not a widely accepted part of the astronomy of 1950. Thus, few astronomers gave any credence to Velikovsky's claim in a 1953 lecture at Princeton University that Jupiter was emitting radio noise. Our picture of Jupiter has been vastly expanded since then. Albert Einstein was sympathetic to some of Velikovsky's fundamental concepts, but vigorously opposed his theory that space was permeated by magnetic fields, that the sun and planets are charged bodies, and that electromagnetism plays a role in celestial mechanics. In June 1954, Velikovsky offered in writing to stake the outcome of his debate with Einstein on the question of whether Jupiter emits radio noises as he had claimed. Einstein replied, as was his custom, by making marginal notes, one of which discounted the idea. 10 months later, early in 1955, astronomers at the Carnegie Institution were shocked to hear strong radio signals pouring in from Jupiter. When Einstein heard the news, he emphatically declared that he would use his influence to have Velikovsky's theory put to experimental test. 9 days later, he died. A copy of Worlds in Collision open on his desk. The cosmic scenario projected by Velikovsky is succinctly stated in the condensation of Warshawski's Doomsday chapter on it, appearing in Reader's Digest December 75 as, quote, "When the sky rained fire." And here is Velikovsky's interesting theory. You look bored to me. Sure, you look very bored to me. At some time more than four... Fooled you. At some time more than... Got all those boogers cleaned out. I can go all night. The only thing I got against these mustaches is they blocked the entrance. At some time more than 4,000 years ago, according to Velikovsky's interpretation of ancient texts, the giant planet Jupiter, this is Velikovsky's theory, about 320 times more massive than Earth, underwent, you see, I want to do something to the folks on radio. Yeah. Here is a little bit of a scale. Now, this is not the way the universe looks, because this is something totally different. In fact, this has a prophetic calculation in it. But there's Earth and there's Jupiter in relative size. 320 times more massive than Earth, Jupiter underwent a shattering convulsion and hurled a planet-sized chunk of itself into space. Now, does anybody know whether or not that happened? Was anybody on Jupiter to check it? The blazing new member of the solar system, the protoplanet, that is, when something's proto, that means it's before what is to be. A proto-Malaysian is the ancestor of the Malaysians. Proto-planet Venus is the ancestor of the planet Venus. I don't mean to talk down to anybody. I just want to show off. The blazing new member of the solar system, the protoplanet Venus, hurtled down a long orbit toward the sun on a course that would eventually menace the Earth. To Velikovsky, it was clear that this, remember, much of his Worlds in Collision was based upon taking the Bible as fact for certain phenomenal happenings that would have physical overtones, and then searching the records and ancient myths and legends worldwide to see if there were similar records outside the Bible of the same kind of physical phenomena.